Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Really interesting spot with the two first-round picks, and I can see a trade-back scenario present itself at the 31st pick, only because when we get to that far down in the first round, there's going to be a lot of teams who have guys listed in their 20s that don't have that pick in the first round and will want to make a jump to get that. So I think there's going to be some assets available there. You know, Buffalo as it stands right now doesn't have that second-round pick, so I can definitely see a trade-back scenario there.
That is Sam Costantino from Sportsnet, their draft analyst. He was on with us just, a little while ago in the last hour. If you missed the interview, it's available in on-demand audio at WGR550.com. Hockey news made by the Sharks yesterday. They keep Erik Karlsson in San Jose. He gets a mammoth 8-year contract worth $92 million. The Rangers traded for Jacob Trouba. Now, with Winnipeg, Trouba's a restricted free agent, so the Rangers would still have to sign him. They give up Neil Pionk and a first-round pick in this year's draft, the 20th overall pick. They keep their second overall pick that they had in the lottery. The Sabres have announced their development camp plans for this year. The camp will run next week from June 26th to 29th. We have information on that available at WGR550.com. Yankees beat Tampa. The Jays lost to the Angels. The Mets lost to Atlanta. The Bisons are home tonight, and they are home all week. They're beginning a 7-game homestand that'll be played out over the next 6 days. Josh McCown has retired after 16 seasons in the NFL, and the Raptors held their championship parade slash ceremony yesterday. There was a shooting during the course of it. Four people were injured. The police in Toronto have arrested three in the shooting, and none of those four people who were injured, by the way, suffered life-threatening injuries. Those are your headlines. 803-0550 to join us this morning. 888-550-2550. As we talk Sabres, off-season, Jason Bottrell.
But first, from that parade. So yesterday we made fun of Brett Hull for singing Gloria, right?
Yeah, he was attempting to sing Gloria. I mean, I could make out some words.
He was the some might say, inebriated individual singing at a parade, having a good time. And yesterday, Kawhi Leonard, I would say, had the highlight of the parade. You're familiar with the very, very famous Kawhi Leonard laugh?
I'm not, actually.
You don't know?
I had to have that explained to me.
You didn't know the Kawhi laugh?
Mm-mm. I heard the clip, and I thought, everybody's going crazy on the stage. I thought, what's the deal here? Now I know the story behind it.
Wow.
But I had not heard the Kawhi laugh.
We might have to get the original Kawhi laugh. Because
if you can, that'd be great.
There might be people out there that don't know the Kawhi laugh.
I was not aware of the Kawhi laugh story.
Okay. Well, anyway, at his introductory press conference with the Raptors.
Yeah, after the trade?
Yeah. Yeah. He was answering a question and he laughed.
Oh, okay.
And it's a very strange kind of laugh.
Yeah.
You know, like weird. And it's become a meme.
So that
people have had fun with it. Yesterday there was a link of linking up the laugh to his buzzer beater that beat the Sixers. People have had fun with his laugh. You have the original? Okay, here's the original.
I don't even know where you're sitting at. Like.
Okay, so that's the original Kawhi laugh.
All right.
So at the parade yesterday, he did a reenactment, kind of. He had poke a little fun at everybody and at himself doing the Kawhi laugh.
Enjoy this moment, and have fun with it. Ha, 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 ha.
That's good. Now that makes sense. I could not understand why people were going crazy when he did that. Now I completely understand it. Thank you for explaining it to me.
It was a funny moment. Good moment for them. Good, and good for the Raptors. They certainly had themselves a party. Right?
Yeah. And now, I wonder what it's like being a Raptors fan. I mean, obviously you are delighted. I'm not. But you have, are you sitting at the parade just continuing to wonder, is he staying? Is he leaving? Do you mentally get yourself to expect him to leave? Like, you know, talk about how he wants to go to Southern California. Obviously, you are deliriously excited about the championship.
You know what you are doing? You know what? Some are. I keep always turning it back to this, so I apologize. But a lot of people there are turning to their friends and saying, imagine when this is the Leafs.
You know, I actually thought of that. I thought of that.
Right? It's unavoidable. The numbers, the sheer numbers were incredible.
Yeah.
And when that's the Leafs,
right,
the parade route goes all the way to Mississauga.
They'll have to shut down the city. They won't allow more people into the city.
It'll
be like the Magic Kingdom at around New Year's Eve when they close the gates because there's too many people inside Disney World. I did think of that yesterday. I saw a tweet about ratings in Canada, viewing ratings for the Raptors, where what their average audience was in the regular season, first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, third finals, game six, right? Game six would have been the last one. And the numbers went from, like, I don't know, 800,000 in the regular season, average viewers, to 1 million in round one. And they went up, obviously, to a high of, like, say, 4 million or something for the final game. And it was pointed out, like, the Leafs playoff games averaged 3 million viewers. But I mean, the numbers blow away. Not surprisingly, they blow away the Raptors. I mean, it was a good crowd from what I saw, the overhead shots yesterday in Toronto. But I actually was thinking the same thing because I was driving home, and I flipped on a Toronto radio station to hear coverage of the parade, you know, what they were talking about. And I actually thought, as amazing as it is, as excited as people are, and I was thinking about those ratings numbers that were tweeted out, imagine if the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. I mean, the place would be...
It'd be nuts.
Well, was there even an estimate, like how many people were there yesterday? Hundreds of thousands? I did not even see an estimate. I couldn't even begin to think what the number would be like if the Leafs won a cup. How many people would come downtown for a parade?
The Global News says 2 million.
Really? For yesterday?
2 million fans now on the lower end of estimates.
Okay, you want to double that for the Leafs?
Triple.
I mean, it would be bananas. You might have to run the parade for 2 days. All right, first group out. We're starting the parade again. If you didn't get there yesterday, come today. I mean, it would be ridiculous.
Yeah, Toronto's chief communications officer, Brad Ross, said the early estimate of 2 million now represents the lower end of overall crowd estimates.
Well, I mean, it would just be a mass of humanity in downtown Toronto.
Yeah. So, fun day for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
And how could you not just wonder what it'd be like if it was the Leafs?
Yeah.
Quick follow-up to our Hall of Fame thing. Sean tweeted in. He knows a guy, Brian, who's the director of hospitality and events at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How did this come up?
The
jackets.
The Pro Pat Football Bolin. Ceremony. No ring, no coat.
For Pat Bowlen, they're not giving the friends and family.
Where they're revisiting their policy. They're trying to figure out what
to
do.
Because they don't give it to family. They only give it to the person.
Correct.
And according to Brian, a lot of Hall of Fame members, many will be buried in their coats. Oh, you do keep it. You get to keep it. You get to take care of it. And some get buried with them.
Sure. Why not?
Sure.
Makes sense. It's your coat. You know, that's why I just thought, like I said, as a keepsake, I just thought it would make sense. I don't know why you have a policy where you can only give it to the player or the coach or whoever. If they've passed away, the family gets the ring and the coat. It's a really nice way to remember your loved one and continue honoring his memory as one of the greatest ever in the National Football League. Anyway. I wanted to bring up a quick viewing tip for you, too, but go ahead if you want to do
viewing
that.
Viewing tip on?
The Ali special on HBO.
Okay, I've been waiting to see that.
But you want a question first, or you want me to?
Go for it.
I watched part two last night, so it's a two-part special, okay? It's called What's My Name? It's on HBO, so if you have HBO, you can access it anytime on demand. And I watched part two because part two was pretty much his professional career. Part one is his younger days, his upbringing and everything. I assume it goes maybe up to his Olympics. But part two is pretty much his professional boxing career. And I know you're a huge Ali fan. But there were some things that are going to be pretty amazing when you watch it back.
I mean, I'm as huge a fan as you could be for someone who never saw him fight.
The things that right.
I've read a ton about him. I've tried to learn as much as I can.
I would have seen a number of the fights. But it's still amazing how much he fought, how often he fought. They were talking about how there was 1 year he fought 12 times or 5 times in a 12-month period, which to me is nuts. Like training, recovery from a fight, getting ready for 5 times in 12 months he fought. He was fighting all the time. Like, they talked about Frazier when Frazier knocked him out at the Garden. I think Frazier defended his title 2 times in 2 years. Well, he just never fought anybody. And Ali was just constantly stepping in the ring against people. One of the other things that stood out is how many times he retired. Like, how many times he announced at the back end of his career, this is my last fight. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. And he just kept fighting and fighting and fighting. And they showed, you know, him losing to Spinks. It was so sad to watch the clips. He was, you know, he had rope-a-dope. But this was rope-a-dope times 1,000. Like, he wasn't throwing punches. He was just getting pummeled by Leon Spinks. Mm. It was really kind of sad to actually watch that part of it. It was tough to watch him at the back end. And I'll tell you one other thing that really stood out, now that we know what happened with his health, you know, Parkinson's and everything else. Before his career was done, I wish I could remember. I don't remember exactly which fight it would have been. But in his last few years while he was boxing, you could see in the interviews, like, you could hear how slowly he was talking. And you could see, and I don't know if that's, maybe that's the Parkinson's, which had yet been diagnosed, but you could hear him beginning to slur his words. Like, you could tell they're showing old clips of him on with Cosell and Dick Cavett, and it is noticeable how he has slowed down in terms of his ability to answer questions and give responses, and how he is beginning to show signs of slurring some of his speech, which I never thought about back then. I didn't catch it. I didn't think about it. In hindsight now, because we know what happened to him, it stands out noticeably when you're watching this special. I mean, he is great in the early years, you know, before the first Frazier fight and all the buildup, and, you know, him, you know, anytime he talks to the media, he was fantastic. And as he fought and fought and fought and got later in his career, you can just see he did not have that sharpness when it came to it. It was very noticeable. And he was, and there, you know, he was very sensitive to questions about whether, you know, boxing is damaging your brain and is shortening your life. He didn't want to hear any of that stuff.
Hmm.
But it's a fascinating. When did he end up? He ended like 55-4. I forget what his final record was. But it's a great special to watch. Was it five? He lost to Burbick, Norton, Spinks, Frazier,
Holmes.
Holmes within. Yes, that's right. He lost the decision, so it was five.
Yeah.
When he lost to Burbick, I just thought, wow, man, you just lost to Trevor Burbick.
There was a special on the Larry Holmes one, right? An HBO special?
Yes, there was a
special. Because that was very...
It was about Holmes, wasn't it?
Yes, it was
about him.
How it was so late in Ali's career, and Holmes is fighting his hero, and he's beating his hero.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be doing it.
Because it was sad.
Because it was clear he was no longer competent to be.
Right, and that's what... That was tough for me to handle, too. This is... You know what it is? It's funny. I don't think of Ali in this discussion. When we have the whole... Great athlete stays on too long, and we always bring up, like, Willie Mays is the poster child for the great athlete who stays on too long, and he's broken down, and it's actually sad to watch him at the end of his career. You don't bring up, I've never thought about Ali in that discussion, but watching his clips in the fight he lost to Spinks, Burbick, and the Larry Holmes fight, and they showed interviews with Larry Holmes, who, I forgot this part of the story, he was a sparring partner when he was like 20, 21 years old. Ali had a place outside Reading, Pennsylvania. He built this like log cabin, this training facility. Holmes lived nearby. So Holmes ends up sparring for Ali. And as you mentioned, Jeremy, you're right. You know, this is his idol, his hero. Ali was his hero. He ends up fighting him, and Ali just can't even, you know, he's having trouble just defending himself. Holmes is crying after the fight. Like, Cosell asked him about this when he was interviewing him. You were in tears. Why? And he just talked about how difficult it was. This man's the greatest ever. And how difficult it was. It had to be really tough as a guy who idolized someone to be in the ring knowing he's half the boxer he used to be, a third of the boxer.
Yeah, well below
it's
that.
It's really, and you're being asked about beating Ali when you know in his prime, no one beat this guy. Like, he was almost impossible to beat, you know? And the fight against Foreman was a thing of beauty. The fight against Foreman and Zaire. They had a note that when Foreman won the championship, the next however many fights he fought, nobody got past round two against this guy because he was such a powerful fighter.
Watching Foreman and Frazier in the Down Goes Frazier fight.
It looked like Frazier didn't give a crap.
It is it's if you've never seen it, you've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
To see a boxer get knocked down
that many times. Right.
And to see the way that Foreman fought, he was just like this walking zombie. He was just such a beast.
Right.
Like,
well,
and the punching power is incredible.
That's why I thought, so Foreman, no one gets out of round two on Foreman. And then Ali comes out and beats him. And Ali does the whole rope-a-dope. So Foreman's throwing punch and punch and punch and punch. And he's just getting tired. I don't remember what round Ali knocked him down, knocked him out. Eighth. And by the eighth round, like, Foreman is exhausted because he's been throwing all these punches. And here's Ali saying, okay, fine, I got you. And now I'm going to take you out. And he knocked him down. And, yeah, the clips they showed of the Foreman-Frazier fight, I swear it looked like Joe Frazier did not train. It looked like it. If you would have asked me, I would have told you he threw the fight because he was not defending himself. And it looked like one punch and he dropped like a ton of bricks. It looked like a guy who was throwing the fight or just didn't care. Almost like, you know what, I've been champion. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to deal with all the stuff that comes with being the champion. I'm going to throw the fight. That's what it looked like watching the clips of that. But it was... You can appreciate, again, just the greatness of Muhammad Ali's career, watching all this stuff and how he bounced back from some of his losses, how he beat Ken Norton after losing to him, how he beat Frazier twice after losing to him.
Yeah, he beat Spinks after losing to him.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that, too.
At the Superdome, by the way.
Yeah, and he lost him, what was it, in Vegas? I think he lost him initially.
Yeah.
But it's a really good special, so if you see it on HBO, give it a look. It's very good.
The question I was going to ask you, we've got Craig Button coming up on about 15 minutes here for NHL draft stuff. Was I wake up in the morning now, I'm kind of at a coach watch. I'm at trade watch, right? This is trade watch for me. Mm-hmm. I woke up this morning and my first thought was, did the Sabres make a trade while I was sleeping?
Coach watch, Skinner watch, trade watch.
Yeah,
here's your Sabres off season.
Yeah, here's the trade watch. I went to bed thinking, I wonder if they'll trade while I'm asleep tonight. And I woke up thinking, did they trade while I was asleep?
Yeah, well, I saw your tweet morning.
Yeah.
Said, no trade.
They are my first thought when I wake up and my last thought when I go to sleep. You know, I tell you. I think
isn't it supposed to be your wife?
Well, you know, she's there too.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
But, I think about the Sabres all the time. And I woke up and my first tweet was, no, they didn't make a trade. Mm. Trying to save everybody else some time. Maybe you'll see that.
Thank you, by the way. I did see that.
You'll see that, and you can stop scrolling and going through, and you can go on and get things done for your day.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this. Who's facing more pressure right now? You know, the Bills had their media golf tournament yesterday, got a chance to, see everybody from the Bills, and I think they feel pretty good about where they are right now. Maybe it's because they've got some vacation before
they're off for 5 weeks.
Camp. Yeah. But in reality, if you're Brandon Bean, you feel pretty good right now.
I think you hit all the areas you needed to hit in the offseason. Now they still have to play, but you hit everything you needed to hit.
And, you can... When you get a job as a GM, you can come in and tell your owner, we're going to win the Super Bowl. But you can't really control if you win the Super Bowl. There's only so much you can do. You can try to acquire Antonio Brown in a trade, but if he doesn't want to play here, or if you want to draft a quarterback number one, but you're not picking number one, you can't trade up to that spot. You can do the best you can. And what the Bills have done in the course of 3 years is made the playoffs, cleared out their cap, and drafted a franchise quarterback, which is probably the 1, 2, 3 on the checklist of things they told ownership they were going to do when they showed up here. We're going to end your drought. That's we got to get you in the playoffs. We're going to clear out this cap situation, which is a little bit messy. And of course, we're going to draft a franchise quarterback. You would have identified you want to do that right away. So bang, 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 they've done that. With that now comes the pressure of, okay, well, it's time to be good, right? It's time to be a consistently competitive team. The talk about the defense is that it's going to be, could it be the best defense in football? Could it be the Bills and the Bears and everybody else? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fair level to expect, or at least to shoot for. I think so. Between that pressure of it's time for you to be the real, the full go team, versus the pressure that Jason Bottrell's facing, which is, you got to do something here. You got to be competitive, because whatever Bottrell would have said was his plan when getting this job, none of it's happened.
Yeah, what was his plan? What would he have said to the Pegulas in terms of a checklist? The
Bills won. We're going to hire a good coach. Right. We're going to hire a good coach. You've got good young players here in Eichel and Reinhart, and we're going to get this thing rolling. We're going to draft Casey Middle. Right. What's the goal is to be a good, young, fast team that hired a coach. That did not work at all. He's made a couple trades. One was a nice trade. One really looks like it set them back and has them chasing. But here you are in year three, and your body of work doesn't exactly show much. So you have two different teams, two different GMs. One guy's been here 2 years. One guy's been here essentially 3 years. And they both have a lot. I think they both have a lot of pressure, but in different ways. Hmm. The Bills have pressure to prove that they can take that next step. the Sabres have pressure to prove they can take a step.
Yeah, it's a good pressure, if there is such a term or such a thing as good pressure on Brandon Bean and the Bills, because you feel like you've got the pieces in place to execute your plan. You've executed your plan. You feel you have the pieces in place. Now we have to wait and see if they actually work, if they're actually good. Is your line better? Does the quarterback take a stride, multiple strides? Did you do enough to improve your receiving core? The one glaring spot on your defense you addressed with the first pick in the draft. So I think it is a good pressure because the expectations are high. On Bottrell, it's the reverse. It's, hey, dude, you're going to turn this thing around?
Right,
because if not, I'm going to think that maybe you're the wrong GM for the job.
So who has more pressure? One, because pressure is directly related to expectations. The Sabres' expectations remain low.
Yeah.
If they were to finish ninth, they would probably point to that as growth and success.
Sure, you know, about
and,
ninth in the
hey,
conference.
Hey, you know what? You
got to
feel pretty good. Yeah. If the Sabres had the year that the Bills had last year, which is, and didn't make the playoffs, but the pieces that you've brought in seem to, they're coming along, and belief is there, right? There's some level of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very high bar, but yet there's a lot of pressure to reach that low bar. Meanwhile, for the Bills, the bar's higher,
yeah,
which might mean a little bit of added pressure.
But I guess it's a different kind of pressure. The Sabres' pressure for Bottrell is pressure for his job.
Right, he's in
danger.
Like,
when we talk about being a McDermott, you always say, I think they're pretty, right? You feel they're pretty safe.
I think they're almost as safe as anybody in football.
So
I think McDermott and, yes, I think
the expectations are there, but there's not pressure for them to produce this year or else.
Yeah, I would think
there's pressure for Bottrell to make this team better now.
I think for the Bills, the only way something could happen is if the two of them were to split, and I don't know why, you know, I don't expect that. But I think that they are as safe can be.
Right. And in terms of the hockey team, I think the owner's wondering if he's got the right GM or not.
Yeah, I don't know I mean, are they going to fire their GM and have – if it's a bad year.
Do you have another disastrous year? Like the last 2 years?
It's hard to even fathom it.
Right.
I mean, it's very believable. But it's hard to even consider.
Well, first off, you don't want to consider.
You could continue to be that bad.
Right. They've set a really bad bar here with the last 2 years. So, I, you know, firing the GM, I don't know what the Pegulas are thinking, but they're on their second coach, and they're not making progress. So I think there is a lot of pressure on Jason Bottrell to make this roster better now, to be competitive this season, to compete for a playoff spot. You know, I am, me personally, you know, year of growth. How about year of competing for a playoff spot? You know, I think he's under the gun. I really do. And I wouldn't rule out the idea that if this thing goes badly again, that he could be out of a job.
Does that mean he gets a little bit more desperate? I don't want to say desperate, but a little more aggressive.
Yes.
Because he knows.
I think he's got to be.
Do you make a Skinner deal for Chris Kreider? Chris Kreider has a no trade. He can submit 11 teams. 1 year, 4.6. He's good.
I would trade
He would
for
absolutely
Kreider,
yeah. be a very good pickup for
Well, again, and again, what did I give up for Skinner? Nothing. I gave up picks and a prospect who maybe they didn't think was ever going to make it. You know, you're not giving up Ristolainen for Kreider. I mean, you're giving up futures for Kreider. Yes, I would bring.
You're not
Chris
giving
Kreider.
Up Ristolainen for Kreider unless you identify Ristolainen as a player that you get better by sending out. Which there are plenty of people that will make the case that, you know, sending him out makes you better.
Yeah.
But you can do this two ways. You can improve by sending him out and getting better, and also the return, because the team that's getting him thinks they're getting better. Now, there are a lot of players like this that some NHL analysts, you want to call them numbers guys or whatever, there's different opinions on all these assets. You find someone that thinks it makes them better. If you also think just getting rid of him makes you better, then, you know, your price is different.
It's the change of scenery answer to a trade question. Like, hey, how come you traded so? You know, sometimes guys just need a change of scenery.
Sure.
You know, he just needed to get a fresh start elsewhere.
Travis Yost was tweeting about that last night. He said, you could have an awful lot of success in the NHL if all you ever did was trade away 20-year-old defensemen that people say is about to come into his mid-20s. Mid-20s defensemen that are about to come into their own, because it never happens. It almost never happens. The guys are who they are. The
Sabres did trade Tyler Myers away.
Yeah. Funny enough, the guy that the Rangers just traded to Winnipeg, this Pionk, is 23.
Okay.
Ristolainen's 24. The difference is that Pionk
he's only got 1 year in the league.
He's not played a lot.
Yeah.
Ristolainen's played a ton.
Right.
And you probably have a pretty good idea of what he is.
Well, he's got over 400 games in the league.
Yeah. So if the Sabres identify him as, we'll be better by getting rid of him, like, all right, well, then don't give him away for nothing because someone out there thinks that we can get better by acquiring him.
I wonder if Botchel's at that point, right? Has he reached the point where did he go into the offseason thinking, I have to trade Ristolainen?
Probably not, because you would have thought that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why wouldn't you have thought it before last year?
Well, maybe Botchel wanted a full season himself to watch this guy practice every day and play every day and evaluate everything himself. And now
he didn't get that last year? I mean,
oh, 2 years. I, yeah, I mean, two years ago.
Sorry, two years ago.
2 years ago, he gets the right. So you would have traded him
and
after
they finished
your first
in
year.
Last place.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I said I don't. I look at Ristolainen being traded not from the standpoint of the Sabres know they will get better the minute they move on from him. I look at Ristolainen being traded as the Sabres look at him as something that will get value back for us,
yeah,
you know, for this team, and that's the top trade chip.
Texter writes in, I'd give Jason Botchel two more years. First year was a Murray hangover. Last year, his first year. Let's wait and see. 3 years is a good window to see what he does. In what world is year two year one? Why is his second year his first year? His first year was his first year.
He turned over the roster pretty good his first year,
and they
right?
got
were there 10 new faces on opening night?
And they got considerably worse.
Yeah. And it was his coach that he picked.
Yeah.
And that coach bombed.
He picked a coach. He had 10 new players, and they went to DFL.
Yeah.
Like that. How is that Tim Murray's hangover?
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah, that's what I said. I think if it's another disastrous year, we're going to be having a discussion about the Sabres moving on from their GM next April. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. It's a busy time for hockey right now. You got the draft coming up. You got trades going on, free agency, contact period next week. We're going to delve into all this with former NHL GM Craig Button. These days works for TSN. He's coming up in a moment on WGR.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Look at the draft this year, whether you want to go 3-10, 3-12, there's some very talented players in that group. Teams have the same players sort of in there, but it's going to be a different mix from that aspect. So I can't predict it. Or there's going to be a lot of trades because teams want to move up to get their guy maybe a spot or two ahead. Or there's a group of players that they're going to feel comfortable that they come down to them anyways.
That is Sabres GM Jason Botchel. They are, of course, prepping for the draft. The NHL Awards are tomorrow night, and then the draft is Friday and Saturday. In Vancouver this year, we'll have coverage, of course, here on WGR. The San Jose Sharks re-sign Erik Karlsson. $92 million over 8 years for the 29-year-old defenseman to stay out west.
Full no-move clause, I believe, as well.
Yeah, the Rangers acquired Jacob Trouba from Winnipeg. They gave up defenseman Neil Pionk and the 20th overall pick in this year's draft. Trouba is a restricted free agent, so the Rangers would still have to sign him. Sabres have announced their plans for the development camp. It is next week, by the way. If you'd like information on that, you'll find it at WGR550.com. The Yankees beat Tampa. The Jays lost to the Angels. Mets creamed by Atlanta. The Bisons are home tonight. They've got a 7-game homestand over the next 6 days. Josh McCown announced his retirement from the NFL, and that's 16 seasons for McCown, and he played with 10 different teams in 16 seasons. The Raptors had their championship parade yesterday. There was a shooting during the parade. The ceremony. Four people were injured, non-life-threatening injuries. Three were arrested by authorities in Toronto. Those are your headlines. The next update coming up at 9 o'clock. We are going to the Western Hotline. There's a lot of hockey to cover, not just the draft. Trades, free agency, maybe offer sheets. So we thought it would be a good idea to bring in a guy who used to be a GM in the league. And these days you can catch his work at TSN.ca and on TSN. Craig Button joining us here on WGR. Craig, it's Howard and Jeremy. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you gentlemen as well. Could you, did that parade route start in Buffalo? Because it seemed to take about 9 hours for them to move about a couple miles.
It's funny, we were saying as big as the parade was yesterday, Craig, you would know this too. Imagine if the Leafs ever won a cup, imagine how many people would show up for that parade.
Yeah, it would be pretty big. Although when you think about you know, yesterday, and then they're saying over 3 million people. I mean, that's a pretty big parade. I don't know. I didn't know this. Did you know in 1967, 30,000 people showed up for the Leafs Stanley Cup parade?
I didn't know that. No, they'd get a little more.
30,000 people. What was their fourth cup in I don't know how many years, 6 years or whatnot. And so 30,000 people at the parade, and then somebody said, well, they were used to winning. They didn't need to go to a parade. Boy, would they love to have one now, wouldn't they?
If they only knew then that, you know, 40-plus years later, that maybe more people would have gone to the parade at that point. Hey, before we get into the draft with you and Craigslist, the big news of the day in the world of hockey yesterday, of course, was the Carlson deal. What are your thoughts on him staying in San Jose? And I guess the second part, Craig, would be, how does San Jose look at all their UFAs and their RFAs and make this work? They're going to have to do some roster movement, won't they?
Yeah, they sure will. Hey, listen, Erik Karlsson, we know he's a good player, okay? So that's not one. We all know what Doug Wilson's trying to do. It's an 8-year deal for a 29-year-old player that's got injury issues. And, I mean, this contract is not going to age well. I mean, Dion Phaneuf at 34 just got bought out. And, Erik Karlsson, do I think he can be a good player for 3-4 years? Yeah, I think four might be stretching it, because at $11.5 million, there's an expectation that you're an elite player. You're an elite performer, performing not just at the top of your team, but at the top of the league. So to me, that just can't happen. It's just, I mean, everybody thinks they can beat, the decline. And at 29, it starts. But it's not going to age well. And to your point, you know, you start to look at the other contracts and how you manipulate your roster and everything. And it's not basketball. One player does not get you into a position where paying them that much money can make that big of a difference. And you know what? Look at the Toronto Maple Leafs. John Tavares, I mean, good player. But, you know, the same thing is going to happen to him. I mean, there's going to be a decline, and the last years of that contract are not going to look good. And, you know, people say, well, if you win a Stanley Cup, it doesn't matter. Oh, okay. If. I think you got to manage your team on a basis of a lot of different factors, and you can't just say, well, I got to go for the Stanley Cup. Understand what he's doing will not be a contract that will age well.
Let me ask you, and this could actually tie into the Sharks discussion. Winnipeg was another team that people looked at and thought, well, you're going to have to do something with the RFAs, with Tyler Myers, how do you make it all fit? So they trade Trouba. And I'm wondering, Craig, will we see more of this? Will we see Tampa? Will we see Toronto? Will we see Vegas? Will we see other teams that are going to have cap issues for whatever reason start moving pieces?
Yeah, you have to do it. There's no way. There's no other way around it. You have finite resources called the salary cap. So, you know, Jacob Trouba was going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer at the age of 26. He'll be coveted. And Kevin Cheveldayoff realized, I'm not going to be able to sign him. And then he knows I need money. And the money, you need the money now. You don't need the money in August, because now the free agent market is dried up. So for him to try to re-sign Tyler Myers or other free agents, he had to make this move now. Neil Pionk's a good, solid player. I mean, a lot of people in Winnipeg don't know how good he is, but he's a good, solid player. They get a first-round draft. This is a necessary trade for the Winnipeg Jets because of what you pointed out, RFAs, managing your roster. And, hey, listen, Kevin knows he's a good player, Trouba is, but you got to walk away from players. Listen, and Buffalo Bills fans aren't going to want to hear this, but I got to say, all you got to do, the model for dispassionate assessment is with the New England Patriots. And that's what you have to do in a salary cap world. The problem is everybody thinks that the salary cap, the implications and all the different things that apply to everybody, they think when they're signing their own players, it doesn't apply to them. And that's where you make them say, Belichick and the Patriots never fall into the trap, ever.
Well, they don't have to fall into the trap because they've got the most important piece that makes up for everything, and that is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Okay, yeah, well, it doesn't make up for anything, because when you walk away from Jamie Collins and you walk away from Chandler Jones, these are impact players. And my point is, if you don't have linemen and you don't have players that can block for Tom Brady, you don't have receivers that can catch the ball, it's not basketball. And so I know what you're saying about Tom Brady. Well, guess what? It applies to hockey too. And you have to be able to say no. I can't afford them. I got to move on. You have to make in a world with finite resources, and you have to make these decisions.
Don't you think
the Patriots do it every year, and the NHL teams don't? And then all you got to do is look around the league and look at the bad contracts that haven't aged well, and these aren't going to age well.
But don't you think with hockey teams, Craig, that you can identify maybe, I don't know what the magic number is, 3, 4, but maybe what the Leafs are doing. You're going to have a handful of guys that are going to make the big money, and your middle class will get squeezed out, and then you're going to need a whole bunch of younger players that are relatively cheap.
Yeah, good luck trying to win with that. Good luck.
How do you win?
Well, you win by having to make the hard decisions. Do you think you can win with $40 million tied up in four players? I'm going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I'm going to say I want to answer that question first. Yes, I do, and I think teams will start to do that over the course of time. We've just entered the $10 million contract era, and I don't expect it to stop anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say, name me the $10 million so you don't expect it to stop. You got $40 million tied up in four players. Now, wait a sec. Then you got Morgan Riley and Frederick Anderson. That's $50 million in six players.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So but, how do you win? I mean, you're telling us a lot of ways.
How do you win? Like, listen, you have to form a team. There's not one right way to do it. But I can tell you this. In a world in a salary cap with finite resources, you have to make hard decisions. That will never change. And you have to walk away from players because you can give $10 million to this player, this player, this player. You're not going to have enough players to fill out your roster. And you're not going to have enough good. Yeah, you'll have players that can play, that can be on the roster. They're not going to help you be successful. And that is going to be, unless the salary cap goes up massively, and I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, the cap does go up every year. I guess my question to you is, would you, if you're a GM, would you put a cap number on the max contract you would pay?
No, I don't think you have to box yourself in. I think that what you have to do is every situation is different. But when you're not ready to make decisions to walk away from players because of the implications that it could have negatively on your team and on your salary cap, then you're not, like I said this last year, John Tavares is a really good player. I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs needed him. I think it was an unnecessary luxury. And listen, he's good. I get that they won July 1st with the press conferences. I think they're going to have a tough time, you know, managing those types of contracts and filling out the roster to be a successful Stanley Cup contender.
We're with Craig Button here on our Western Hotline.
I guess, Craig, what I think is what you're seeing is like teams like Boston. Boston doesn't have a big contract yet. They signed their deals a couple years ago. You know who's in great shape is Colorado, because Nathan MacKinnon signed for really cheap before everybody kind of figured out that the top players are now going to make $10 million. So Colorado is primed to have an incredible run with relatively cheap deals and good young players. But, you know, I guess what I would say to you is my belief is that what will happen is and I've said this a lot on the station, I think the middle-class player in the NHL will be squeezed out. And you will have top guys, and everybody else is going to have to settle for the rest. The people that will end up paying for those high players, those high-priced players, are the guys at the bottom who can't get a raise.
So really what you're telling me is how long will this evolution take?
Probably about 3 more years. I mean, it's already started to happen. There are only how many $10 million players in the league? We did it today.
10.
There are 10. I would bet within 3 years there are 30. How much is Jacob Trouba going to sign for?
I don't know. I mean, my point isn't about do the players deserve it? Are they worth it? My point is about the management side of things. You have to make tough decisions. And the reason I point out the New England Patriots, there's a reason why they've stayed at the top of the league. And, they do a great job with talent acquisition. Yeah, they have Tom Brady. They make decisions that they don't fall in love and just put themselves in the salary cap hell. When you get yourself in the salary cap hell, good luck to you.
All right, before we let you go, I wanted to get a couple Sabres questions in with you real quick. At 7, you have your Craigslist out. At 7, who would you suggest for the Sabres in that order, in that spot on the draft?
Well, here's what I think. I don't think the Sabres can go wrong at 7. I think there's going to be different types of – there's going to be centermen available. There's going to be wingers available. So whether that's Cole Caulfield and Matthew Boldy wingers, whether it's centermen like Trevor Zegras or Kirby Dock or Dylan Cousins, and even defensemen. Like, there's Philip Broberg, a defenseman you want to consider in that area. So I think that, I mean, that's just one player. I mean, there might be some other defensemen that they covet. But the Buffalo Sabres are going to have options at seven. And I think that all the players that I just mentioned, I think they're really good players and have the ability to have to be real strong players in the NHL. So it comes down to, what do they want to do? What do they want to add to their team? And I think that, again, when I use the term you can't go wrong, I really believe you can't go wrong with any of those players.
I saw some of your comments on Cole Caulfield. You seem to be a very big fan of him.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't anybody be a big fan of 72 goal scorers? You know, I've used this term now a number of times, and I'll just go back. Three Hall of Famers that scored almost 2,000 goals. I'll tell you what was said about them in their draft year. Mike Bossy couldn't play defense. Brett Hall, too lazy. Luke Robitaille couldn't skate. So I'm hearing the same things about Cole. Oh, he's not tall. Mm-hmm. All I know is elite goal scorers, they don't come along very often. So I know he's only 5'7" and a quarter, but I know this. He has all the qualities of elite goal scorers. So to me, I've never heard a coach say, I don't need any more goals. Don't give me any more goals. They all want more goals. And this guy does it better than anybody in the draft.
Craig Button with us here. Hey, last thing for you, Craig. When you look overall at the Sabres roster and what needs to be done this offseason, there's been, you know, Jason Botchell's talked about adding scoring. For sure you can say he needs a number two center. They probably need at least another winger on a top two line. What do you think the Sabres need to add this offseason?
Well, I think that when you look down the roster, I think that they got to add. And you know what? You look at scoring. You look at a second-line center. I think that you need to have players that can carry play. And a lot of times you look at the top end and go, we need 30 goals. Yeah, well, that'd be nice. But I think they need more depth throughout their lineup, more depth of – like, you look at the St. Louis Blues, you look at the Boston Bruins, and I'm not saying that you just go be like those teams, but what do they don't put too much, they alleviate the pressure on their top guys because those other players can go out and carry significant play in their respective areas. I think that's how you become a really good team and you become a really difficult team to play against. And I think that's, if it's a score, great. But if you get a couple of players that can really drive play from your third line and you get a really good number four defenseman that can really add a different element to your team, those are areas that can really help this team. Because one of the big challenges for the Buffalo Sabres last year is that when their top players weren't on the ice, they had massive challenges, and that created a lot of problems for them.
Craig Button joining us from TSN. You can read his draft work, his Craigslist at tsn.ca. Craig, thanks for giving us some time on the show this morning. Enjoy the draft.
I will, thanks. You have a great day.
You bet. 803-0550 to join us. We'll continue the discussion in a moment. WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here's the 2-1. Swung on and into the air to deep left. That ball is high. That is far. That is gone. His second home run in as many games. Cameron. He hits one to left. And the Yankees take a 3-0 lead.
What's he going to do for Edwin and Encarnacion?
Encarnacion. Something. I don't know. I can't think that fast.
That ball's been incarcerated. Yeah. In the behind the wall of the. I don't know.
In Beast Incarnate, isn't that Brock Lesnar? Maybe he calls him the Beast Incarnate.
Yeah. That's going to be a tough one.
Edwin Encarnacion. Yeah, I'm
It's a celebration for Encarnacion.
That's much better than my Beast Incarnate. Hey, the Bisons are home all week.
And Game of Thrones night is Saturday.
I was just looking at the throne of bats that they created. Did you see the picture of it?
I did.
So that is Saturday, and there is a throne of bats as part of House Bison's night. You can see the picture at bisons.com, actually. Well, first off, before I get to that, so they're home all week. They have a 7:05 game tonight. Tomorrow is Wings Wednesday, so they'll be wearing the special Wings uniforms.
I got to get one of those Wings hats.
Well, they have.
Find my way down there.
By the way, hint, hint. They have jerseys, caps, and apparel on sale at bisons.com.
Do they sell that stuff on Saturdays? Like, if I went to Saturday, if I went to Game of Thrones night, can I buy the wing wear stuff?
Don't listen to this conversation.
All right.
Brayton.
Birthday?
Birthday. We know what we're doing now. Let's talk after the show.
Don't listen to this. I want the flats hat.
You know what? This is like my marriage. This is great. Just tell me exactly what you want, and I'll buy it for you. That way I know you won't be disappointed.
Perfect.
Good. We'll talk after the show. I'll see if I can get you that throne of bats. That looks pretty cool, actually. You might want to have that in your bar.
Ooh. Okay, go ahead. Text in your Edwin Encarnacion home run calls from John Sterling. We've got a really good one right off the bat. Go ahead.
Also, Wednesday, Wings Day, Topps Dog Day at the park. You got a Friday night bash, and it's a doubleheader. And Saturday, 6:05, House Bison's Night, the Game of Thrones tribute game. You can get your picture taken on the throne of bats. It is a cool-looking throne with a whole bunch of bats as the seat back. It's really awesome. It's at their website. You can take a look at it. Labatterday night is back this Saturday. Man, there's a lot going on at the park this week. So here's what you need to do. Go to bisons.com to get tickets to any game you want to go to this week, to multiple games. Pick the game, pick your seats, print your tickets out. You can do it right there on your computer. All this is available, all the information you need. I know we threw a lot at you. It's all available at bisons.com. When you go to their homepage, you'll see a picture of the throne of bats. And then right under it, get my Bison's tickets. So, and the schedule and the promotional schedule, really simple. Just go to bisons.com and you can handle all of your baseball needs for the Bison's right there at their website.
Texters writing in, two of them. Chris wrote in and another one. Edwin Encarnacion.
Okay. I like that.
That's not bad.
I like that. Yes. That's very Sterling, too. I could see him doing
mm-hmm.
that. And Encarnacion.
Ed wins that matchup with the pitcher, and the ball is now Encarnacion. Too much?
Too much. I think Encarnacion.
Nothing is too much after Giancarlo Nosy Posto Parlo.
Yeah, with the foreign language. It's a long, drawn-out way of getting to a hit a home run. 803-0550 to join us as we talk Sabres. We're talking off-season. We're talking the battle plan this week for Jason Bottrell as teams head out to the NHL draft. Coming up at 9:30... So there was a story over the weekend from Elliot Friedman. He reported in his 31 Thoughts that the Sabres had talked to the Rangers about Jimmy Vesey. 9:30, we'll talk to Rangers radio analyst Dave Maloney about Vesey. There are some other Rangers names that are in the rumor mill for some trade ideas, so we'll kick all those around with Dave Maloney at 9:30.
Edwin gets a headwind, and it's gone. That's from Pete.
I think you still got to go with the end. It's Encarnacion gone.
I also feel like you would want the tailwind, not the headwind.
Yeah, the headwind tailwind slows you down.
Yeah.
The headwind would keep the ball in the
Encarnacion.
That's good. We're on to something.
That's got a lot of potential.
People are bringing their game up. I love it.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.